Welcome to the Design the Future podcast, where we talk with women leading the way towards a better built world. Design the Future is hosted by me, Lindsay Baker, with Kira Gould. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Design the Future podcast. It's good to be with you. This is Lindsay.
And this is Kira.
Ah, and here we are. It's a chilly day here in Oakland. How are you doing, Kira? Are you staying warm?
I am staying warm. I have a head cold, as you can hear. And I'm just back from some travel to the Midwest, which was super fun. So yeah, good times.
Yay. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Oh, travel back in the winter time. Oh, that's brave.
Yeah. Well, yes, there is a little discussion in our household about possibly moving back to the Midwest. And so I wanted to make sure that my family was remembering what the Midwest was like at all different times of the year.
That is an important thing. You do not want to just be in a place and somehow have to like the summertime on the East Coast, always a pleasure.
Yes, it's also college basketball season. So I got to watch a college basketball game at my alma mater, University of Kansas, which was super fun. And, you know, catch a Bruce Springsteen concert, you know.
Hey, all right.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun. That sounds like a really good trip. So, yeah, I've been traveling a lot more recently, and it's definitely that thing where, I mean, actually, it's been kind of an okay winter. I was in Pittsburgh on like an unseasonably warm day, and everyone was so excited, you know, to actually get outside.
Nice.
It's nice to remember what that feels like to be in the sort of the dead of winter and have one of those like unexpected, nice, warm, sunny days.
Yep. Something we don't ever get that in California, right? You don't really get that feeling, that kind of unexpected relief.
Pros and cons to that, obviously. We all sure. feel very fortunate, but it does kind of mean that there's no, like, you know, there's not that much joy about the weather either direction. But no, it's been good. And I'm excited about some of my East Coast travels. We are gearing up for our Living Future conference, which is going to be in DC from May 3rd to 5th. So for anyone that is on the East Coast, anywhere nearby, and has never been to a Living Future conference, we're back in person for the first time. So
this is your chance. I mean, and Living Future is a really, really special conference. I mean, the word conference barely applies.
they did used to call it an unconference.
I know.
That's the point, which I think is still the spirit of the thing anyway, that it is very much an opportunity, I think, more for people, the attendees, to shape the experience and a little bit less of the stodgy panel presentations and things. But yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. Actually, one of our former podcast guests, Erin Mizan, is going to be one of the keynotes, which is exciting.
Oh, wonderful.
So
how exciting. You heard it here first, people. Because I didn't, has that been announced? I didn't.
It actually was just announced today. So by the time this comes out, hopefully you won't have heard it here first.
That's right.
We're really excited, and as you all know, it's a community that I feel like has been nice for me to continue, and you know, staying in touch with Erin since we had her on has been
that's exciting news. Really, I'm happy to hear that.
It's really nice. So check it out. There's Living Future. Well, you can just go to living-future.org, but it would be great to see folks there, and there'll be lots of opportunities to connect. It's like a 1,000-person conference. It's definitely not the Greenbuild size. So if you're craving that sort of more intimate environment, then we're definitely a good one for you.
But absolutely.
It should be a lot of fun. I don't know. It's just a lot of travel these days, Kira. We're really getting back into it, it seems.
Definitely. It's sort of like back with a little bit of a vengeance post-pandemic. It seems like people are out and about, lots of moving around.
Totally. Yeah. I'm enjoying it though. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's helping me feel a little bit more connected to what everybody's doing out there. You know, it's like, feels, it can be, you know, depending on how you pull it off, working from home can be a little bit isolating. So yeah, I'm feeling a little more connected.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a little taste of that when I was in Kansas City and just talking to some folks. I got a chance to visit with Bob Berkebile about what he's working on there in the Midwest there. And I don't know, it just reminded me of how revitalizing that is to actually talk to folks about what's happening in different regions and really see the connections and learn from what's happening in other places. And it was very inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds great. And I'm glad that you got to check in with Bob. What a special thing. Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, here we are still doing a podcast, and I still love that we get to talk to people, even if it is not in person, because it feels, I don't know, somehow like we really get into it in a way. So
yeah,
you know, still really happy we're keeping this up.
Indeed. Well, that's a good moment, I think, to introduce our guest for today. We are so excited to have Marnies Jackson with us today. Hi, Marnies.
How you doing? Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And I'm going to do a quick introduction for those of you who don't know Marnies. She is an environmental and climate justice activist, advocate, trainer, and educator from Pontiac, Michigan, where she is a mother of two. London and Dawson are her kids. Marnies is the co-director of the Midwest Building Decarbonization Coalition, which focuses on inspiring and educating Midwesterners to end new installations of fossil fuel equipment in residential and commercial buildings by 2030, and to achieve zero emissions from these buildings by 2050, with intentional, consistent integration of equity and labor justice across all facets of the work. We're thrilled to have you with us, Marnies, and we'd love to know if you could tell us a little bit about how and why you got involved in environmental and climate justice and in building decarbonization work. Tell us about your path.
Thank you so much. And once again, thanks for having me on this segment of Women in Sustainability, Designing the Future. And I have to say that I did not take a traditional pathway to this field. I actually got my undergrad degree in African American Studies, which is intersectional with environmental justice, climate justice, and of course, building decarbonization. However, my first job out of college, I went to Eastern Michigan University. I got a position with this community action agency called Oakland Livingston Human Services in Oakland County, Michigan, doing weatherization coordination. And that's pretty much bringing people to learn about how to get their home weatherized, outreach into communities, low-income communities, the target audience, because, of course, getting your house weatherized can help you save on utility rates and become more healthier. So I didn't start on a traditional path, but as I moved up the career ladder, I decided to stick with it because it was quite interesting and I needed to find a job that validated my degree. And so I stayed with it and I got a position with the Southeast Regional Energy Office, essentially doing the same thing, but doing energy audits in low-income communities and suburbs in southeastern Michigan. And so after that, I decided to go back to graduate school, got my master's degree in social justice with a concentration on environmental and economic justice from Miragrow College. And the reason why I chose that, because I experienced poor air quality in Pontiac, Michigan. We had a water filtration plant on the east side, and it's still sometimes spelled toxic over there on that side of town. But I smelled it coming out my front door. And so with two younger kids, we didn't know if it was a correlation between them having asthma, but it was just not good during that time with their health. And so we moved from that side of town into another side of town, but I used to go down to city council, complained about it, because learning more about the environmental movement, it was definitely a rude awakening, but then also epiphany, hey, these issues in our cities in our states happen concentratingly in Black and brown low-income communities. And so after that, I was in graduate school. I graduated, got my first position with the NAACP Environmental and Climate Justice Program as a regional organizer. And I learned more about how this is more of a international issue, and that it's not just Detroit, Michigan, that was plagued with poor air quality through two power plants, but all over the United States. And so I got the opportunity to travel, visit all types of different places just to learn, train our members at that time on the impacts of environmental and climate change. And so fast forward, I held a position with Mothers Out Front, essentially doing the same type of work of teaching members about climate impacts, climate justice, environmental justice. But then I transitioned back to the building part of the movement. And I think this is where my heart is because I have experienced it by way of utility justice injustices. I was in that position where I was considered the working poor or the working class, and I didn't qualify for LIHEAP assistance when I was faced with a huge utility bill that I couldn't pay. And I'm gonna be honest about it. And so while I was working at the NAACP, they did a report on utility justice shutoffs in the Midwest and across the United States and how people are forced to pay these high utility rates and there's no shutoff protection. And that's what I was facing. But then also don't have options for cleaner energy options. So I wasn't facing the problem because I just didn't want to pay my utility bill. I couldn't afford it. As I said before, I was considered the working class. I had a job, but I just couldn't. I was put in a position where I either paid this bill or I paid this bill, right? And so, digging deeply into the academic part, I came and got this position with the Midwest Building Decarbonization Coalition because I knew the experience professionally and personally of what people may experience due to the indoor air quality that could be poor due to your appliances and lack of access to clean energy options. And then also the utility injustice where our utility providers don't provide us access to cleaner energy options. So I am here now as the co-director, and I manage the community engagement and equity to make sure that when we're creating policies that are equitable across the board, and that we have to center people who, like I said, can't afford or who may not even be in this area of advocacy, right? So a part of my job is making sure that people understand where their energy comes from, how to get access, how to advocate for themselves, and then how to get into these different decision-making areas.
That is amazing. What a great story, Marnie. Thank you for sharing that. And so many aspects of it obviously were, quite personal for you, in terms of your experience. And it's just really great to hear. I wonder if you, this is a question that's a little bit for some of our listeners who might be thinking about different pathways in this movement. And I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about what it's like to work in a role like yours. What should people be good at or interested in if they wanted to follow a similar path?
So I think experience is just necessary. Like I said, I didn't go to school to be a co-director of a building decarbonization. I have no technical experience, right? I have the gift of gab. I have outreach experience. I am a connector. I am an organizer, and I relate to people. I can tell the story, and I am empathetic, right? So I think for me, understanding that this is very intersectional with other movements, because as I lift it up, this is an economic issue, this is a racial issue, but then also it could be an age issue where people who are older may not be able to afford their utility rates, or they may be on a fixed income and they may be not be able to afford utility rates, or we are thinking about youth, right? They will inherit all the mess, right, that is going on right now, the little ones. And so they should have access to cleaner energy options. So for me, in my position, you have to be able to put yourself out there and not be afraid to speak up for people who are not just able to speak up for themselves. And then also have a net for building up people who are shy, who are not as extroverted like I am. But then also have a skill of trying to identify what the problem is and building those relationships. The key to understanding a community and doing advocacy work is that you have to build relationships. Like, ask about your daily lives. How are the kids doing? Don't immediately go to being a missionary, because that just doesn't work, because missionaries go in there and do the work and it's not sustainable, right? These problems are still going to exist. So we have to instill and empower that kind of self-confidence in people who just feel like there's no hope. So for me, in a role like mine, you have to definitely be a connector. You have to be brave, to be quite honest. And I never looked at myself as being like brave, or maybe I just didn't say it until now. But I have to say, I am a brave person. I'm not afraid of any politician or any opposition. Like, I welcome conversations with oppositions because it's about perspective, right? I need to understand why utility companies is so fixated on their bottom line at the expense of people's lives, right? So it's all about being open-minded as well, but being able to put yourself in other people's shoes, because everybody is not going to want to switch to an electric stove. People are going to want to keep their gas stove because it's a cultural thing. Like, people like to cook with their gas stove. So I have to accept, I have to leave people where they are, but then also let them know these are the things that will happen if we continue to go down this road of using gas and all these other CO2 emissions, like oil, gas, and some of these other false ones that are out here, and coal is phasing out. So those are like the main two. So I have to say, be open, be brave, and honestly, be honest and transparent. I mean, if you don't know something, be honest about it. I tell people, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question right now, but let me find out.
I love this, Marnice. I love this idea that so much of what you're doing is, like, I like the way that you said that it's not evangelism, or that it's not missionary. I think that was the word you used. It's not missionary. It's really engaging with people long term and sort of making sure that, yeah, it feels like a dialogue. It feels like a conversation. That transparency means a lot. This is all so helpful. It's really great to hear. Okay, so can you tell us just a little bit more programmatically, like, what is the Midwest Building Decarbonization Coalition? What's the scope of what you all do? What's your, you know, mission? Just kind of help orient us on that a bit.
Sure. So the Midwest Building Decarbonization came into fruition, the idea, back in 2019. So this is an idea of the Energy Foundation, which is one of the main funders that fund us to do this work. And so I got brought on in 2020. And so pretty much we really just want a clean, healthy, and affordable buildings for all people, right? And the mission is to inspire and educate Midwesterners to end new installation of fossil fuels, those dirty ones, oil, gas, coal, equipment, and residential and commercial buildings by 2030, and to achieve emissions from these buildings by 2050 by focusing on equity and labor justice across all the work that we do. And so we do that by having this regional structure across the Midwestern states of Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio, Missouri, Indiana, and Iowa. So we bring people together, current and prospective coalition members. We convene a space for them to focus on equitable building decarbonization, defining what equity is for us, even though we know the technical term what people use. We focus on strategic planning. We work with our members to develop strategic policy, regulatory campaigns based on a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and opposition. We have a lot of different collaborations. For example, we have our Market Transformation Development Collaborative that focuses on advanced water heating, energy collaborative, district energy collaborative, and that's like a community heat pump type of situation. Like, we heard of community solar is a community heat pump, and residential space heating electrification collaborative that we collaborate with all types of people across the Midwest. And so we then also focus on fundraising for our coalition members to support them to do the work, to actually do the work and bring them on to do projects like electrification pilot projects, or to do educational pilot projects so people could know about building decarbonization, because this is like other movements within the environmental movement. Building decarbonization is not new, but it's more fun, right? It's more easier to talk about now, right? And then we provide education and training just to learn about justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, undoing white supremacy culture, building decarbonization 101. Any training that's related to building decarbonization to get us to our goal, we provide those trainings. And then, of course, we provide technical assistance where people need assistance with filling gaps for our partners who may not have grant writing capacity or speaking about a particular topic. We provide that for them. And then we have our public narrative where we tell the real stories about carbon pollution from buildings by establishing. We have our reference library. We have our blogs where our members blog and do a video series on building decarbonization and their experience. So we're kind of like all over the place, but our main focus is equity, policy, market transformation, research, and then, of course, changing the narrative so people can understand that they are a part of this because we spend 40% of our time indoors and our electric appliances, our homes may not be up to code, and we are experiencing the atrocities of these issues because of not having cleaner energy options or not being able to afford to switch to electric appliances or upgrade to your home because you need a new roof or things of that nature. So for us, we do a lot of advocacy at the state level, and of course, at the federal level with the Inflation Reduction Act and other federal policies to make sure that we have access to these different upgrades within buildings and in homes.
Oh my goodness, it's so much stuff, Marnie. It's really awesome. I love it. The space that you are filling is just such an important space at that intersection of community, of policy, of justice, and, you know, with the sort of decarbonization technical background. It's just so exciting to hear all the stories. So thank you for that overview. And maybe do you want to share with us, is there one particular project that you're working on now that you're excited about that you want our listeners to know about?
Well, so at our equity summit, we do an equity summit yearly since I've been there. And so the focus of the equity summit last year was self-determination, which is one of the Kwanzaa principles, Kuji Chagalia, self-determination. And we want to continue to equip our members and community members to advocate for themselves. And so one of the major projects right now and everybody else is working on is the Inflation Reduction Act. And so now we are, since the states are going to be receiving the funds from the federal government to do the work, we at the Midwest BDC is focusing on the implementation and making sure that the implementation is just, equitable, and that the funds are actually going to communities that need it, like contractors, minority business, and communities that are going to actually receive the money and do something with all these funds. And hopefully we'll see the improvements across the states and across the local communities.
That's great. I was going to ask you about the IRA, so I'm glad you mentioned that because I certainly assumed that was impacting your work to some degree right now. It's very exciting to see what's going to happen with that. But I wanted to also ask you if you could talk a little bit about what drew you to working on getting fossil fuels out of homes specifically as a focus.
Well, for me, definitely because as I mentioned, I have experienced not having access to cleaner energy options. I see community members in Michigan, for example. We have storms without a reliable grid, so that means we experience utility shutoffs. And so going 2 to 3 days without electricity is definitely detrimental. People can die because they don't have access to their breathing machines. Then also, you're losing a lot of food, right? And so food prices are high and you don't get reimbursed for the food costs, right? I think I spent at least $500 on groceries and I'm a family of three. And so I think these utility providers don't take stuff like that into consideration. Their argument is that having solar is not reliable because it doesn't generate a lot of sun in Michigan. Well, if you had a reliable battery storage, it would. And so on top of that, energy efficiency programming is not accessible. It's really hard to get your home weatherized communities. And as a person working within weatherization, the work really doesn't get done. It takes like a big outreach strategy. It should be in the city's climate action plan. And for example, a lot of cities don't have a climate action plan that your home has to get weatherized, right? Because it's an economic issue. And then it's also can be a personal issue. So for me, experiencing utility shut off because I couldn't afford my utility rates. Like I can't remember how much that bill was. Oh my goodness. It had to be like $1,000. And I'm looking like, what am I doing wrong here in an apartment? cutting off the lights, and I remember I did have a gas stove. Cutting off the lights was on the budget-wise plan. However, there was no shutoff plan provision for that. And so when I seeked out to get help, they told me I made too much money. And I'm just sitting here like, how? I don't qualify for government assistance. You know that, right? So luckily, me being a resourceful person, somebody pulled some strings for me. Right. And so, and I got the bill paid. That's when the utility justice part of me kicked in. Like, why? And I actually had one of an activist who's in the utility justice reform here in Michigan analyze my utility bill, the peak, and analyze my budget. Like, where am I going wrong here? So this won't ever happen to me again in the dead of winter with two kids, right? Because, for some states, if you can't pay your electric bill and your stuff get cut off, they come take your kids. So just that whole thing right there, I do not, it's personal. I don't want anybody to ever experience anything like that ever again. Now I get it, you're just not paying your bill because you can't pay a bill. But most of the time, most people want to pay their bills. They just can't afford it. And so I think for me, this is why homes and renters has been the focus because we spend 40% of our time in the house, okay? Whether it's in the house or a building, school building, we're 40% indoors, right? And just think about in the pandemic, right? So I just think this is honestly the most important part. Because I am like actually the case study of this because I have a gas stove. I am still a renter, and rent landlords do not want to switch to electricity because for them it's the upfront cost that you have to pay, even though they can raise the rent, right? Or they don't want to take advantage of these different programs to help offset these costs that they have to put in. So I am hoping that with this IRA that both landlords, homeowners, even contractors who are actually doing the work can really do something good to offset these costs, right?
Absolutely. That's great. Marnie's one more question about work things, actually, and that's really what are you most proud of accomplishing in your work life so far?
Whew. Honestly, I have done so much, and just making a career out of something that I did not even know. Like, I tell people, I fell into this position, right? I fell into this field, and making it a passion by experience, of course. And then also just seeing like everyone go through the same struggle and they're afraid to talk about. I'm proud of that because I'm able to connect with people and just tell my story and be vulnerable. However, I really love connecting with people. I love helping people get into this field because 1% of energy related jobs, Black people are in this field. And that has to change, especially since we are experiencing the atrocities the most, right? But I am so proud because I was appointed to the State of Michigan Governor's Climate Council on Solutions, where we have this clean, healthy plan that talks about all the stuff of climate justice, environmental justice, equity, and all these things that I'm passionate about. So I was appointed last year, and I get to advocate and be Marnie's and hold people accountable to a lot of things that people were not being held accountable for. Like, for example, we know about the Flint water crisis, right? We don't want that to happen again. So we have to make sure that we have protections around things like that so it won't happen again on any governor's watch, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on, right? So I'm happy that I've been appointed to that position, and it's a good position to be in and learn, because you get to learn about more of the industry folks, the legislator, and I may actually run for office.
Oh,
so
wow.
I might actually, yeah, I might actually do that. I don't know yet.
That's exciting. I appreciate you saying that, and I could totally see that. Like, that's a we need more folks who, know, who care about these kinds of issues and who think about them in public office. So yeah, I hope you do. Well, you just mentioned, Marnie's, this word industry, and I want to kind of, we want to ask you some questions about how you think that the larger landscape of this work is going. And so I guess the first question for you is a little bit more about how you situate yourself in the larger community. And we sometimes ask folks, you know, do you feel more a part of an industry? Do you feel like you're a part of a movement? Is it both? How do you consider yourself in the community, I guess? Like, what is your role?
So I play so many roles because of my positionality, right? I do see myself a part of a larger movement. However, I am, with me being appointed to the Governor's Council on different board members, I know people probably see me as a higher up in these different positionalities, and I respect that. However, I just feel like I'm just a normal, ordinary person, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I just know how to move a little bit differently. And like I said, I'm in a good position to teach people how to do that. So I think I'm all over the place, to be quite honest, which is kind of what people used to tell me, Marnie, you just don't fit into one thing. And I never have. So so when you say part of an industry, well, maybe, yeah. A movement, definitely a part of a movement, but I'm just Marnice. And I think as people get to know me and understand the story, I just don't fit into one thing. And that's can be good and bad, just depends on how you look at it. But I have found the good in it because I'm a connector and I can relate. Like, I walk into different spaces and it could be a millionaire in the room, and I promise I will relate to that millionaire because we all put our pants on the same way unless I'm doing something different. so I'm going to be able to relate to anybody in the room. Like, if, what's his name, 45 came into the office, or Trump, he came to the office, I promise. We will have the greatest conversation, and I would still be sticking to my personal values, which may definitely not align with his, but I know that he's going to change his mind about something. I promise you that. I would actually love to see that. So I just honestly would, because sometimes people like that need their ego stroked. But then also you have to do it in a way where you hand them their crap, right? And that's how you deal with narcissists, just putting it out there. And I know, you know what? I mean, that's just how you deal with them. You know what I'm saying? Okay. you over there. Okay. All right. Now stroking your ego. This is what you're doing, though. So I think that the thing is, people want to be validated. And so I think that's what I learned with being a people person, people just need to be validated and be heard. And to 45, that's just the thing with him. And we gave him that platform, right? So,
oh my God, I'm so ready for you to run for office, Marnie. This is going to be great.
You're going to roll it back and they go like, Marnice was talking about 45. I was like, yes, I stand by everything I said.
Yeah, no, totally. I really appreciate the frame, and it's you just have a very humble and grounded way of approaching these things that is so effective. We've seen it already, and I'm so excited to watch that. To continue to watch this happen over the years. So yeah, it's wonderful. Well, so, you know, talking more a little bit about, kind of, I don't know, where we are today, I'm really curious where you thought the world would be in the 2020s, specifically our movement, but however you want to define that, have you had, do you feel like you've had visions of the future that have manifested, that have not manifested? Like, how do you think about it so far?
Oh, goodness. You know, especially with sustainability in the environmental field, the climate field, we have evolved. And I am grateful that environmental climate justice is being lifted up more in the media and talks, and equity is at the center. And I'm glad that we have like federal monies that's going to, because at the end of the day, it's about the money and how it needs to be redistributed to people who need it, right? That's what we're built on, capitalism. And it's unfortunate that we have to play in this capitalist system. And I know people are not going to like it, but you know, when I say that, it's unfortunate that we have to play these games, right? And mm-hmm. that's what I say within the 2020s, that we haven't transitioned to a different economic system, seeing how consumerism is hurting us environmentally, right? It's hurting us economically as well. Like, we are so consumed with so much stuff. And I just look at the stuff in my house. I'm like, why do I need all of this? Right. And it's going to end up in a landfill. So, like I said, we're all part of the system that we have to buy. Or thinking back to the climate movement, like, you have people, utility companies, corporations in cahoots with each other and the local government and our government to continue these practices and not transitioning to like cleaner options at the expense of people's lives and to adhere to their bottom line. And you know, we have these CEOs making all types of money. Like, no, as much as I love money, right, everybody wants to live well, but there's no CEO should be making $1 billion and we have people who have utility shut off, right? There's just no way. That's just horrible. Your programming should be fitting the needs of the people. And I understand you climbed up the career ladder, but after a while, where does your personal values come in? So I think for the movement, I do see growth. However, I feel like sometimes I just feel like it's when we receive certain things like the IRA funds, or if we go to these international conferences like COP, I just feel like sometimes it just keeps up appearances to make it seem like they're doing something, but then they're not acting quickly. And, you know, So I'm conflicted. I'll be quite honest. I told you I'm always going to try to be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm very conflicted because, yes, I thought we would be further along by now, especially with technology, with all the expertise, like everybody been telling you these stories that we have to work on climate. We have to, and I just feel like we're just sometimes stuck, but then I do see progress, you know, with community members, more people engaged in building people power. But then sometimes when you get up to the legislator and have to play politics, that's the part that gets us really stuck, right? Because we have to learn how to navigate these different systems. And can keep people apathetic for even wanting to turn out to vote or just having an attitude like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? Things are not going to change, right? So sometimes I'll be honest, I get caught up into that type of thinking because I've been in so long that sometimes you do lose hope. But then I sit there and I think about all the members of the coalition or in different spaces when I just have a conversation about utility justice or energy justice, how they peak up, right? Or I was on vacation and this guy who lives in Texas, he argued me down about clean energy, right? And I had a response about everything. I was like, so, you know, well, how's your grid doing in Texas, though? And he was like, he shut up then. I was like, you know, I mean, look, I understand your perspective. Solar is expensive, right? You have to pretty much take out your last kid, unborn child, right? As a loan. I get it, right? However, if we don't switch and advocate for it, look what's going on in Texas, okay? So, and that's all I have to say about that. He had nothing else to say. And this is an older gentleman. Like, he definitely like a borderline baby boomer, a silent generation. And so I'm just sitting here like, you know, look, I'm not going to back down for opposition. But as soon as he told me he was from Texas, I'm like, bruh, hold on. Wait a minute. Wait, man, we done with this conversation.
Oh my gosh. I wish I had the opportunity. I feel like I need to start striking up more conversations with strangers because that sounds exhilarating and I'm so impressed.
And the thing is, like I said, I was on vacation. I was in a hot tub. And people, I was being friendly, me and my boyfriend, and we was just sitting there talking. And he was like, so what type of work do you do? And I was like, oh my gosh, it's something here we go.
That is wonderful. And it's also just really nice to hear that zoomed out perspective from you, Marnice, about sort of where this sits. I really, and I appreciate the mention of the constraints of capitalism. I think that is a really important one. And you said it so well, and also just in such a human way that I think we can all relate to about sort of what it's going to look like. I enjoy thinking about what it's going to look like when we figure out a better model for ourselves past the really, you know, highly consumptive capitalist structure that we're in today. So thank you for reminding us of that. We should wrap up in a minute. So we want to ask you our last question. Which hopefully is a nice way for us to send you off back out into the world again. But we want to hear who you're most inspired by these days, like who keeps you going, or, you know, who do you look to for positivity, for energy?
No, I have a really, and I have to say, I have a really good circle of people around me, from my parents to my family. They always say I'm doing some really awesome stuff, and you know, which keeps me also humble and grateful. It's and my kids, like, honestly, like my son, he's like, you better Google my mama, you know. It is so cute. He's like, my mom is famous, and I'm like, okay. So he, in his mind, he thinks I'm famous because I do all this stuff and I'm traveling, and he's 10, and he would tell his friends, you better Google my mom, and she knows the governor. And my daughter, you know, she's a little feisty too. And so I'm just like, my kids are my biggest cheerleaders, I'll be honest. Because my story, you know, as a single mom, divorcee, sometimes my story, as society puts that stigma on single moms, I wasn't supposed to be as far as I am. And so I have to say thank you to, of course, my circle. I also look at people like my previous bosses. I have to say I had some really good ones and I had some really bad ones, but Brianna DeBoe, she works at EagleWorks Detroit. Jackie Patterson, she was at the NAACP Climate Justice Program, and she started her own organization called Chisholm Legacy Project. And then those two women, they are really out here. And Jackie, she was just like my fairy godmother who say, hey, you know, you need to go into this direction, instilling that leadership development. And then Conan Smith, he runs the Michigan Environmental Council. And he was my previous boss. I have to say, they really helped me develop over the years within this field. So they all inspire me because I have seen them transition up, right? And fight in different spaces. But honestly, the most people I am inspired by, the people that really show up to our coalition who did not know anything about building decarbonization, right? And they are passionate, they are fired up, they've taken this to their community. So I have to say, my coalition members, they really are awesome. It's kind of like we're like a family. So,
Oh my gosh, that's all so beautiful. I really appreciate that. And I will also say that Jackie Patterson is one of my people that I'm most inspired by. So I appreciate that. And it's just nice to know that she was a big inspiration and support for you. That's yeah. Awesome. She's oh, wow. Amazing. Okay. Well, so much. This was great, Marnice. Thank you for being with us, Kira. I hope that your cold gets better.
Thank you. Marnice, it was such a pleasure to talk to you today.
And that is it for us this week on the Design the Future podcast. So thanks again, everyone, for listening. Please leave us a review on Apple. It really matters. It helps people find us. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.